Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Welcome to the program here, the phone number. If you want to join the show and bring up anything you want to discuss, 603-283-6160 is an open option for you. 603-283-6160. Otherwise, we always bring stuff to the table that we think you might find interesting. And we tonight includes me, Ian.
And Jay Noon.
Coming up here, the news about Trump being indicted yet again. He has pled not guilty, and we'll tell you about what these charges are in case you haven't heard. But in my opinion, the much bigger news of the day is what's been going on with BRICS, and that is the other alliance of big countries, economically growing countries that are becoming economic powerhouses around the world, or already are, such as China. So you've got B for Brazil, R for Russia, I for India, C for China, and S for South Africa. And according to the some of the things we reported on in recent months, these countries together have a very, very large combined GDP. I believe they are currently rivaling, if not surpassing, the United States. When you combine them together, and the portion of global GDP that they have has been rising significantly in the last 20 or 30 years, so they are becoming something worth reckoning with.
So if you're talking about the GDP of the United States of America, actually it's really the United States Corporation, but versus those basic BRICS countries, let's not forget that the U.S. dollar is so hyperinflated. Sure. Probably compared to these other countries, because the U.S. is like one of the only countries that enjoys this ability to just totally print all the money up out of thin air.
Well, no, they all have that. Any country that has a central bank, and I'm pretty sure all of the BRICS countries do. So they all.
But are they doing it to the extent of the United States? Have they done it as much as the United States?
Probably. I mean, there was a huge run-up on inflation, which is, for listeners that may be new to the show, inflation is the actual increase of a money supply. It's not the increase in prices. An increase in prices is a symptom of inflation. It is not the cause of inflation. It's not inflation itself. There was a huge run of inflation during the COVID situation. It wasn't just the United States government that blasted out trillions of dollars.
It was all the central banks, right?
Right. Every central bank on the planet, for the most part, used this as the opportunity to go printing crazy with their currency. And I think one way you can look at it, without being like, you know, I'm not a financial advisor, okay, this isn't financial advice, but essentially it's a race to the bottom. So
right.
The question is, who is printing the most? Who is inflating their currency more than the rest? And I think to some extent, when you look at the prices of government monies compared to one another, that gives you some sort of a clue as to who's doing it worse. So, for instance, Argentina is generally considered, along with Venezuela, two of the worst countries on the planet as far as inflation rates are concerned. I think Turkey is up there as well at like over 50%, last I heard. I know that Lebanon is also pretty terrible, but I'm not sure exactly how the U.S. is playing out against.
Is the U.S. has this, you know, mighty military to just destroy all these other countries that want to challenge it. So it's really has, you know, the Turkish, what's it, lira? Is that what it's called? Like, that's, you know, who trades in that?
You know, Turkish people, but yeah,
but
I get
no
what you're saying.
Really.
But look at the euro, for instance, which came down. I haven't looked at its price recently, but a few months ago, I mean, it had been stronger than the dollar for a very long time, essentially, as I recall, since it had come out. And then all of a sudden, you know, a few months ago, it was at parity. It was equivalent to the dollar, and I'll have to check and see where it's at today. But that to me means that the European Union was going even crazier with the.
Well, yeah, they created a lot of money too.
Well, and one of the reasons why they did that was because they also were faced with the energy situation that the United States put them in. In this, well, of course, they also put themselves into it by joining the war in Ukraine on Ukraine's side.
Yeah, letting the United States come in and sabotage that pipeline with a Nord Stream 2 and just the sanctions against the Russians. And then, Russia, you're not going to be able to get paid in euro now. That's where they really shot themselves in the foot, because now everybody is just going to go trade their whatever their currency is that they have for whatever Russia's willing to accept. And since Russia can't settle in euros, all these people in Europe are going to have a very cold winter. They had a cold, expensive winter last year. There's stories about these electric bills going crazy. What had happened in a dairy industry here between the United States and Russia, essentially, went back in like 2007, 2006, is there was like an embargo against, I can't remember exactly how it worked, but it was something like we could no longer export dairy to Russia for some reason. I don't remember what the political climate was, but a lot of American farmers were really upset that they couldn't sell their dairy to Russia. So milk was at that time was worth about $24 a hundredweight, which was pretty good to get paid for it. Back in 2006, 2007, and then when these sanctions sort of happened against Russia, we couldn't send the people of Russia milk and cheese. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that just makes no sense, because who eats milk and cheese? Everybody, especially children, they really need that. It's
Well, it's the people that get hurt the most during sanctions. It's never the governments.
And so what Russia ended up doing in response to this was buying essentially tons of cows from Canada. So a whole bunch of these cows in Canada, these Holstein cows, just start their own dairies. And another thing they did is they offered South African farmers land, because you had to. Where the South African government was taking farms from basically white English-type farmers that have been there for generations and giving it to, native, African people. And so I believe it was Putin, I'm sure it was Putin, at this time offered these South African farmers, hey, we got farms, we got land, just come here, do it, do your thing. So they bought tons of cattle, tons of Holstein cows, dairy cows, and they basically built their own huge, very thriving dairy industry within a few years.
The Russians did.
Mm-hmm. And then as soon as all that milk started hitting the European market, American dairies went out of business just all over the place, because milk came down to like $7 a hundredweight. It went from being $23 a hundredweight, and back then to break even on like the big corporate dairies, these dairies are doing like 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 10,000 cows. Somewhere around $13.
What's 100 weight mean? What does that mean?
100 pounds of milk.
100 pounds.
That's how they measure milk out of the dairy.
Wow, okay.
So Russia basically started doing all their own milk. Russia's got tremendous land, tremendous resources.
Yes,
and
it's huge.
And they sounds like they invited a whole bunch of farmers from South Africa to come farm with them and be productive and useful. And so they built up their culture. They built up their farming industry. They built up their independence. And because now they are able to retail a lot of their dairy product all around the world, and not buying so much dairy from around the world, because the United States shot itself in the foot with these sanctions. Then a whole bunch of American farms went out of business, Canadian farms, because milk got down to like $7 a hundredweight. A couple of years after this, after the Russians kind of got their own dairy operation going, and
they couldn't pay their operation costs at that low a price.
No, they just a lot of them went bankrupt.
Wow.
I think right now, like even that big dairy that went out of that exploded a few months ago,
about that.
Somewhere in eastern Texas. They were milking 18,000 head, according to the report. That's that's a real hefty feed bill after two summers of droughts in the Midwest and in the Southwest. And
wasn't that one suspected to be like insurance fraud?
That's my suspectation. Yeah. I suspect it to because
convenient timing.
Because it's just all the inputs are expensive. That kind of hay that they need for those dairies is really expensive, $600, $700, $800 a ton in that part of the country, and it's just not there because of all the droughts. They've really culled a lot of the American herd. But also, what happened due to the result of American sanctions, about 15 years ago, I'm going back now, maybe 20 years ago, it made Russia basically the breadbasket of the world, because the Russian people were cut off from essentially American food. and I believe this was dairy, grains, corn, whatever. So Russia just, and also about this time or shortly after, you know, I was, you know, learning a lot about like glyphosate and the GMOs. And during this time, I was going to Colorado once a year to work for my stepfather and the corn harvest operation and paying attention to this stuff. And a lot of these guys were really upset with what the state, you know, the State Department, essentially the United States was doing, you know, screwing up their business, making their milk worth nothing, making them go out of business, and a lot of these guys losing, you know, everything they've worked for. But also that now Russia produces a tremendous amount of the world's grain. They actually, I believe, past couple of years now have produced more wheat than the United States.
Wow.
And it wasn't like that, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, they've really focused on self-sufficiency.
Which is good for Russia and its people. And also, the big thing I wanted to throw in there is Vladimir Putin, there's a lot of him speaking about how he's very much against like the Monsanto and all the GMO stuff. And even a lot of India is very much against all the Monsanto things with the GMO dates. You know, you can't just reap. The biggest problem with GMO seeds is they have a terminator gene,
yep.
So they won't produce a new crop.
Just one crop, then you got to buy more seeds.
Right.
Yeah. So economically, these countries are combined together already, BRICS, and they're trying to work out ways to essentially make their economic strength even stronger. And they figured out, according to a post at Russia-briefing.com, they figured out that one of the ways they can do that is to create their own currency. Now, this is something that's been bandied about for some time. And in fact, it came out just a few weeks ago. There was the Russian embassy in Kenya, I believe it was, that made an announcement that they were going to be moving forward with a gold-backed currency it might not be for the individual. It might just be for like countries trading back and forth or governments sending money back and forth. It's not really clear what the sort of the specs of this currency would be. But then I think it was the South African government has officially tried to walk that statement back, saying, no, we're not going to be talking about that at the upcoming BRICS summit, which is starting in less than 3 weeks from now. So by the end of this month, BRICS will have had their annual meeting. It's happening in South Africa this year. And then we're going to know a lot more about, at least publicly, what it is they're willing to admit to. So this is another story saying that this is going to happen. I don't know if they mentioned that it's going to be gold-backed here. But it does say that Alexander Babakov, who's the Russian State Duma Deputy Speaker, said Russia, together with fellow BRICS members and other African countries, are discussing the creation of a new global currency that could challenge the U.S. dollar's dominance and become analogous to the euro for non-Western states. Babakov stated that having passed the test of Western sanctions, Moscow is ready to take on a new role in the world order and together with partners undermine the hegemony of the United States, outlining new trends in the international relations system. He pointed out that 49 of the 55 African countries all attended the Russian-African summit that apparently happened last week, while stressing that achieving real sovereignty for Russia and other countries would necessitate shifting away from the dominance of the U.S. currency. Now, something else that, you know, maybe if you've been listening to some of the world news in recent weeks or months, you know that the Chinese have also been cozying up with the African nations as well as Russia. The Chinese government has been sending, I don't know how many billions of dollars over to Africa to invest ultimately in doing things like building factories and essentially creating jobs in these African countries where, of course, labor is very, very cheap. And I'm sure the land is also very cheap. So what you've had going on is China and Russia are talking about, you know, working with these African nations to build economic strength together. Whereas the United States, on the other hand, has been wielding the dollar as a political weapon, meaning that if you have the dollar in your reserves, and most central banks do, and that's something that may be changing over the next few years, and the U.S. government wants to punish your country for something, they have leverage over you. And that's a completely different situation than countries actually sending money to these countries to invest in those places and possibly build better relationships.
Not to mention the actual biological warfare that the United States has, you know, been conducting on Africa for years through, like, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
What's been going on with that?
Oh, so what's been with all the vaccines that they've been forcing on those populations, and they've had all kinds of...
I don't think that worked well during COVID, did it? I mean, weren't a lot of the African countries some of the countries that were least likely to?
Right, they didn't take the vaccines because for years now it's been like a testing ground for big pharma.
Mm-hmm.
Like Alex Jones was doing reports years ago how you know Merck and Pfizer and the big pharma guys are basically showing up, or a bunch of guys with jackets, and they're just grabbing you know people there in Africa and pork. Villages and just inoculating them.
Wow.
There was all kinds of studies that have been done. RFK's got that book, The Real Anthony Fauci. And then there's also Dr. Judy Mikovits. She's another one. She wrote a book called Plandemic or Plague of Corruption. And then there was a movie about her called Plandemic.
Hmm.
But Plague of Corruption, I believe, she started publishing in like 2018. And, you know, it was very much about... You know, these viruses that they're creating in these labs and, you know, the viruses that were created in Fort Detrick, Maryland when she worked there under Fauci in the 80s. And then they were pushed all over Africa. And this is why so much of the African population, when it came to COVID, is like, no, we're not taking any vaccines.
It was true in the United States as well. A lot of the black population was very suspicious of the United States government and not at all interested in being a part of this particular experiment.
And Dr. Judy talks about how basically the AIDS virus was, you know, invented by the U.S. government under Fauci. And she talks about how they put it in the HIV vaccine. And she's like, oh, that's how Magic Johnson got AIDS, you know, from HIV. And she, I got HIV from the hepatitis B vaccine. I just purposely put it into the vaccine and had to do with XM, I can't remember what they're called, but proteins that were made from the lungs of mice. And this was how this was carried and transmitted. And then it was all propaganda against like African people that it came, you know, came from a monkey in Africa, and African people were having like sexual relations with monkeys was
ridiculous.
All the push on it. But the thing is I could see the African people being, quite friendly with the Russians, seeing mm-hmm. how the Russians are sort of being, you know, deemed as the enemies of America, you know, sort of on the world stage. And, since America has such a poor reputation with the African people and American companies and guys like Bill Gates and the Gates Foundation, just all the mayhem and destruction they have done and all the viruses they've, you know, created and just all the horrible, a lot of those countries are really poor, people are in really bad shape because of American policies. And I think that with the internet, you know, people are figuring that out in Africa mm-hmm. and they know.
I hope so. And we're going to talk more about BRICS here. Of course, if you want to comment, the number is 603-283-6160. They said Moscow and its partners would need to agree on a new monetary unit and on the rules for its functioning. So this is still in the, you know, the talking about it stage. When asked about the new currency, the Russian MP said, quote, "This is not the RMB yuan and not the ruble. There are already certain formulations. The name is not important, but it should be an analog of the dollar." And if that's what it ends up being without gold backing, then it's hard to, you know, really imagine this is going to really take the world by storm. Certainly it could be useful to the BRICS countries themselves to get them off of reliance on the dollar. So it could still be damaging to the dollar. But if BRICS does come out with the long rumored gold-backed currency, that would be something that would be in great demand by, I would say, governments all around the planet, as long as they could prove that they actually have the gold to back it, and as long as they actually are honoring requests to exchange it for gold. That would be, of course, the key factor that they could change anytime they wanted.
I personally couldn't trust a so-called government,
no way,
enforced, backed, regulated, whatever, gold back or any kind of currency.
Yeah,
I don't care
neither
what they're backing.
I mean, that's why the gold back is the gold back as a product. There's something called the gold back for our listeners that don't know. It's a actual beautiful currency. It's an actual piece of gold. It's 1/1,000th of an ounce at its base level. There are higher denominations. And it's something that is so easy to use. It fits into your wallet. It's very, very thin. They've come up with a way to, I think it's called atomic vacuum depositing, like atomically depositing particles of gold onto a piece of plastic. It's an amazingly beautiful piece of art, basically, and I'm such a huge fan of the Goldback. You don't have to trust any backing company. No one's holding the gold except for you. It's there in your wallet. You pass it to somebody else whenever you want to buy something. I just tipped with a Goldback earlier today at the new taco truck here in Keene, and it was funny because the girls at the taco truck, they already had a Goldback that was like hanging on a clip in the back of the truck, so somebody, I suspect it was Aria, had already hit them up, because it's right next to Domino's, and of course Aria works there.
I bought hay from three different farmers here in New Hampshire this year.
With Goldbacks?
Yes, with Goldbacks.
That's awesome.
The last guy, I ran out of Goldbacks the other day, so I paid him a little bit of silver.
Okay, all right.
But he's like, oh, we really like this gold.
Yeah. Who doesn't? I mean, it's just whenever you see the Goldback, whenever somebody new sees the Goldback, the reactions are always so much fun to see how people respond to it. And they're almost always positive. It's very, very rare that somebody will say, I'm not really into gold. It's pretty rare.
One thing I've noticed about farmers at like the farmers market I've gone to around here, the farmers market I went to in Arizona last winter, I was able to spend a bunch of Goldbacks there, and even these local farmers and some guys I've bought some cows from, they like farmers. You don't have to convince them to take gold, even though the Goldbacks are trading at like double spot gold or even a little more than double whatever gold spot is. And I just did it at $5 a, won 1,000 gold back with the guy. Basically, it was, almost worked out to, one gold back per bale of hay is basically what it worked out to. And that was like, you'll pay me in gold? Cool. Yeah, basically double spot price, and he's like, well, it's worth it. Look how convenient it is. Yep. He's like, this is great.
I'm so glad people can see that. Because that objection to the gold back that, it's twice the price of spot. Good luck getting any gold at the spot price, number one. But secondly, it is so low priced compared to other fractional gold, because the more you divide gold, the more the premium gets on that gold. It gets crazy down the smaller the piece. And as you pointed out, before the gold back, there was never any useful small denomination of gold. Anything less than a tenth of an ounce was too small to even hold in your hand. I mean, you would lose it. So with the gold back, it's super convenient. It's easy. You put it in your wallet. If it falls to the ground, you're not gonna have trouble finding it. It's huge.
I have this. It's like a gram bar of gold.
Yeah, it's
but
tiny.
It's 5 grams. The guy just broke me off a sliver of it.
One of those things.
But I don't want to break it up into the little grams because, just like you said, you might lose them. They're just in like a little baggie in my safe. But.
Yeah. That's like old tech.
Yeah.
And it's not worth as much. And there's a huge premium on that stuff, on just the little pieces. So, but I'm really glad that when we talk to people, in my experience at least, about the Goldback, it is maybe 1 in 100 that has that objection. Oh, well, it's twice the price. I don't want to pay that much for gold. It's like, you don't get it. You obviously don't understand the value of this thing. There's a lot of value in being able to actually hold and spend and easily circulate gold. And to pay just twice the price for that value is actually incredibly cheap.
The only question I get when I offer Goldbacks is like, is that really gold in there? I'm like, yes, it is. And they're like, okay, I trust you.
There's more coming up here. And it's, gold has a certain look to it. And this has that for sure. There's more coming up. Free Talk Live.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, silverlungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
You USA News update.
So if you can't beat him, you persecute him or you prosecute him. We can't let this happen in America.
Former President Trump's comments after pleading not guilty to criminal charges connected to his alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. Speaking from the airport in Virginia, Trump noted he thinks the case is persecution against a political opponent and politically motivated.
This is a persecution of a political opponent. This was never supposed to happen in America. This is the persecution of the person that's leading by very, very substantial numbers.
The National Insurance Crime Bureau says the full-size Chevy Silverado and Ford F-150 pickup trucks were the most stolen vehicles last year. More than 700,000 vehicles are stolen in the United States each year. Thanks for listening. Tim Berg, USA News.
I need more time to file my taxes. Help.
On IRS.gov, you can use IRS Free File to get 6 more months. Or you can submit IRS Form 4868 by the April deadline. If you owe taxes, you can make an electronic payment and get a filing extension with no need to submit Form 4868. Go to IRS.gov for details. But remember, an extension of time to file is not an extension of time to pay what you owe.
All across the country, people are coming together to speed up what we can learn about health. The All of Us Research Program is calling on 1 million people to join us as we try to change the future of health. For your family, for future generations, for all of us. Visit joinallofus.org and find out how you can become one in a million.
Extend your life with ExtendoVite.
Everyone around me seems to get sick but me. My brother got the flu twice. My mother was down with some sort of fever. People at work were taking sick days off, and others were just plain tired and run down. And me? Well, I just keep feeling great all the time with Extendivite. My grandfather used to talk about the power of garlic and other herbs he took that kept him healthy. I'm lucky. Extendivite was just what I needed to keep me healthy. And Extendivite is all natural. Extendivite was designed for the heart but does so much more by keeping me healthy all the time. I'll take Extendivite forever. Get your 2 month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. My name is Rick, and you can be like me just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live, and you can join the show if you want to comment. You can talk about bricks, which is what you're into at the moment. You can also bring up whatever you want. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Ian and Jay here in the studio tonight. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Now, I have heard that there's some big news with Dash. I'm not able to verify it in any sort of meaningful way personally because, well, the feds have prohibited me from using cryptocurrency, which is a real bummer when you've got a crypto organization as the sponsor of your show, but that's the reality of it. However, the rest of you can do this, and I happen to know from somebody who has told me, I talked with Joel Valenzuela on multiple occasions, who's one of the guys that kind of works for Dash. He has been a huge fan of ThorChain, and ThorChain, for listeners that don't know, we've discussed it in the past. ThorChain is the world's first truly decentralized exchange. And we've, for years, talked about the dangers of centralized exchanges, the dangers of not your keys, not your coins, where in the world of cryptocurrency, in the world of Bitcoin, if you give somebody else, in this case, a centralized exchange like Coinbase or Kraken or a Binance, whatever their name is, you give them your coins, they are no longer your coins. You may be able to get them back, but if the exchange gets hacked
or if the exchange gets taken down by government actors, or, you know, they lose their bank accounts or whatever, you are going to have a tough time. You may lose all or some of your coins because of leaving them on an exchange. And new users to cryptocurrency do not understand this. They think, oh, well, that's where I bought the coins. I might as well just leave them there. No, it's highly risky to give somebody else control over your cryptocurrency. So a decentralized exchange is a complete change to that situation. A decentralized exchange, you have the keys to your coins. You can swap them at any time for the other coins that are on the exchange that other people have offered up to make them available for swapping. And ThorChain was the first to make this possible. What's the news about Dash, though, in relation to these to a decentralized exchange? ThorChain has been forked now this year for the first time. So for listeners that aren't familiar, forking in software terms is where you take open source code, meaning anybody who's a programmer can go in there and dig through the code and learn about it, copy it, modify it, release their own version. That's what happened with ThorChain. Somebody went into the ThorChain code. They said, all right, we're going to do this too. And they took the ThorChain code. They made some changes to it, did their own thing a little bit here and there. They made some tweaks, and they released Maya Protocol. Now, notice it's called a protocol, and so is Thor, by the way. There are protocols. So the difference between a platform and a protocol, as we've explained in the past, is a platform is software that utilizes protocols to provide you with some sort of service. So websites, for instance, use HTTPS, which the P stands for protocol. And in the case of ThorChain and Maya Protocol, there are websites that you can use that will help you interface with these protocols. But ultimately, the protocol itself is open source code, and it is immutable. It cannot be stopped as long as there are people willing to continue supporting these chains out there. And each of these systems have their own blockchain. So there's the ThorChain, and then there's the Maya protocol. It's got two different chains behind it, as I understand it. I think that's the case. Anyway, the point here is Maya has launched as of several months ago, as I understand it, and the first coin they've added, besides their launch coin, so they launched with Bitcoin and Ethereum and I think a couple of Ethereum tokens like USDT. And then, they, of course, they have their own what they call the Cacao, C-A-C-A-O, which is Spanish for chocolate. It's their own currency that sort of runs the system and is the incentive to operate the system. And so the first coin they've added to the Maya protocol is Dash. So That's the big news. That happened just within the last week. And so what Dash is doing right now is, you know, they're letting people know about this. I mean, this is awesome that you don't need to be on a centralized exchange now to turn Bitcoin or Ethereum into Dash. The thing that they are looking for at this point in the game is to get to get more people to put up their Dash into what they call the liquidity pools. So the way these decentralized exchanges work, well, there's not just coins on there when they start the exchange necessarily. They have to attract what they call liquidity. They have to attract people with an interest rate, basically. Now, I don't know what that is for Dash. As I said, I haven't been on Maya Protocol, so hopefully somebody can fill me in with that information. It may be too early to even know what it is because it's just started trading within the last week. But if you have some Dash that you've been sitting on and you want to go ahead and potentially get a return on that Dash, this is a way to do it. Now, it's up to you to do the research. Take your time. Go into, you know, learning about Maya Protocol. It is a fork of ThorChain. ThorChain's been operating pretty successfully for the last few years. There was some bumps in the road. It's not to say this is a risk-free venture. I mean, there is the possibility that in the code that there could be some bugs, right? Like all the DeFi or decentralized finance protocols out there, they're made by humans, right? And humans are fallible, and so mistakes can be made. And I think Curve Finance is another DeFi platform that just recently got, I think, robbed for $26 million worth of crypto. And they had been operating fine for a long time. So just remember, as always, the rules with crypto are you never want to put up what you can't afford to lose, right? You never want to invest something you can't afford to lose. Thorchain's been pretty rock solid. Maya so far has seemed pretty rock solid. The code is accessible if you have a programmer friend or you are a programmer. Obviously, you can go in. You can audit the code yourself in this case. So I'm just saying there's an opportunity there. And right now I think they have over $100,000 worth of Dash that has already been put up by different users. Because, again, you can't trade unless other users have put their Dash up for trading.
So when you put your Dash up on this Thor chain or Thor exchange...
This is Maya Protocol.
Or Maya Protocol.
Thor was going to do Dash, but then Maya just beat them to it, and they never got to it.
So you hold the keys to that Dash that you put up on like that exchange?
You do, and you can withdraw it, as I understand it, at any time that you want to. But meanwhile, it in theory...
That's always been my fear with... I've never put any money up on like any exchanges, any crypto at all because...
Well, they won't pay you.
Too easy to lose it.
Well, that's the other thing. If you put money up or if you put Dash
then
on...
Then I got to like look at this thing every day, see what it's doing.
The other thing is you won't get paid.
Yeah, okay.
Right? If you...
I also won't lose it.
Well, if you put it... I'm saying if you put it on... Sorry, maybe I misspoke. If you put your coins on Coinbase, Coinbase isn't going to give you 2% for that, even though you know they could be trading or whatever. In fact, you're going to pay Coinbase when somebody trades with those coins, whereas on a decentralized exchange like Thorchain or Maya Protocol, if you put your coins into a liquidity pool, then you can get a portion of the trading fees from every other user that's trading. Now, again, there are risks involved. You need to learn about something called impermanent loss because of the way these automatic market maker pools work. There's a certain formula that's going on behind the scenes. These things have been around for years now, and you do have to do some research into learning about how these things work. The risks come in when what you're doing is you're putting, and I don't want to go too far into this, but just I'll try to keep it simple. Let me know if I'm confusing you here, but the automatic market makers are always in a balance. So whenever you get into the pool, you're not just putting in Dash. You also have to put in the other thing that it's balanced with, in this case, cacao. Which is the thing that makes the system go.
So you've got to take your Dash and convert it into cacao.
Or you can spend your Bitcoin and convert it.
Yeah, okay.
Or there's also, as I understand it, you can do an auto-convert thing where you just throw Dash in and it automatically converts half of it to cacao. But the thing is, if Dash goes up in price faster than the cacao goes up in price, you'll actually end up with more cacao if you withdraw than Dash. And the reverse is true as well. If the cacao goes up in price faster than the Dash goes up in price, then you'll end up with more Dash if you were to withdraw. If you don't withdraw, then you know they might balance back out. So there's something called impermanent loss, meaning that you can go in and look at your pool that you have and see, oh, crap, it's gone down in value. Maybe it's because the price of both of them have fallen. Maybe it's because the price of one of them fell significantly or whatever. And then if you withdraw, the impermanent loss becomes permanent. Right. If you freak out and you say, oh, my God, this is I got to get out. And then you withdraw, then you get whatever you get. And that's the end of the day. However, you could just hold on for the ride and leave it in there for years. And then you never know what's going to happen in the future. So there's the risks of the prices changing on these assets that you put into the pool. But on the positive side of things, you may make a decent return if things work well. So, again, there's no free ride in any of this circumstance.
Yeah, definitely, user beware. Yep. I know countless amount of people who have lost significant amount of cryptocurrencies, putting them on exchanges. I had a good friend of mine, just begging me like about a year and a half ago, oh, you got to do this thing, and it's a pancake swap, and you need this and that, and pays you 24% APY something, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw him like back in May, and I'm like, hey, how's that pancake swap? All that. He's like, oh, yeah, dude, that lost. I don't have any crypto left. I got no more Bitcoin. I'm like, oh, that's I'm really rough. Glad I didn't do that.
Yeah, that's why I say don't put in what you can't afford to lose. But if you got a bunch of Dash sitting around and you don't mind putting a little bit of risk involved, then do some research. Check it out. It's called Maya Protocol. I think they're very, very exciting, because it's at least an opportunity to do something with an asset that's just sitting around. But again, risk is involved. Check out Dash.org to learn more about Dash. It's one of the oldest cryptocurrencies out there. It's widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. And here's the other thing. You don't have to do what they call liquidity providing to get into the exchange. You can still just swap your Dash or swap your Bitcoin, and you don't have to put up anything, you know, into a pool for that. So the liquidity pools are just for people that want to take that risk, and they want to potentially, you know, bring in some return on their Dash. But for everybody else, you can just use the thing and then never have to go on a centralized exchange again, especially as these guys add more and more currencies over time. And the other thing is, it's going to be possible, if it's not already possible, automatically to be able to trade from decentralized exchange to other decentralized exchanges. So the Thor chain and the Maya protocol are linked together, because one of the coins that they added to Maya protocol in the beginning was the Thor rune, their coin. So they can swap through the decentralized exchanges, which is a pretty cool thing. So if there's something on Thor chain that you want and you've got Dash, even though Dash isn't on the Thor chain protocol, you can still make it happen, which is pretty awesome. So we're starting to see the beginning of this decentralized exchange phenomenon, and it is still really in the early days of these things at this point.
I kind of feel like this is what they told me about Bitcoin 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, when I just heard about this, you know, exchange. So, I mean, I guess you could turn crypto into dollars on that exchange?
Or not yet.
Not yet?
No,
okay.
Unfortunately, there's no...
So then it'll be decentralized until that happens, probably.
Yeah. unfortunately, the big challenge with cryptocurrency, of course, is these on-ramps and off-ramps, as
right.
they're called. Once you get into crypto, whether you're earning Bitcoin or Dash or whatever by someone paying you because you're doing work, which you've done many times, Jay, or whether you're mining it with a mining operation that you've set up inside your basement or something, however it is you're getting crypto, once you're into crypto, it's relatively frictionless to move from crypto to crypto. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, crypto to crypto. I've noticed it's gotten increasingly difficult trying to turn crypto into cash without paying some kind of fee.
Well, you're always going to have to pay a fee to convert from one to another.
Definitely,
in most cases.
Several months ago, there was way more people just willing to just buy it. And,
okay. Well,
you know,
if they're willing to pay you spot, then yeah, there's no fee in that particular case. But most people are going to, you know, unless they're desperate to sell their crypto, they might charge you something.
So I've just, like, a couple of, recently I've been asking people to pay me in goldbacks instead of crypto or mm-hmm. or silver, because it's pretty easy to turn silver into dollars.
Goldbacks have
locally.
Definitely had a huge boost in popularity because they are just that easy to use. But anyway, thanks to the Dash DAO, which is their decentralized autonomous organization, for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That's Dash.org. And for those of you that are looking to exchange, maybe buy some Dash with your Bitcoin, the Maya protocol, as I understand it, makes that pretty easy. So check that out. All right, so we continue here. We are talking about money. We're talking about the BRICS. And the potential that they may come out with something that they say could shift a lot of power away from the U.S. dollar. It's pretty clear that the BRICS organization, that is Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, they may be adding some more letters pretty soon from what we understand. We'll talk about that coming up here. But it's pretty clear that this is an organization that is very interested in dealing damage to the dominance of the U.S. dollar. And the theory here from, at least according to Russia-briefing.com, in a statement from the Russian state deputy speaker, the Duma deputy speaker, Alexander Babakov, he's saying Russia is going to be taking a new role in the world order. And 49 out of 55 African countries attended the Russia-Africa summit that happened in the last week, apparently. And they are looking to team up to shift away from the dominance of the dollar. When asked about the new currency, he said the name is not important, but it should be an analog of the dollar. He said further, after all, the BRICS, in terms of its potential today, is greater than the G7. That is, the potential of the market where this currency can function is very wide. There are no reasons to be tied to the dollar, he said. The BRICS nations have been seeking to shift further away from the U.S. dollar and mutual trade. The de-dollarization trend has been gaining momentum in the wake of sanctions that effectively cut Russia off from Western-dominated financial systems. Numerous developing nations, including fellow BRICS members, have also started to move toward alternative currencies in trade. Moscow floated the idea of introducing a BRICS currency just last year. Putin had said last June that member states were working on developing a new reserve currency based on a basket of national currencies used by the five-nation bloc. In 2022, China's trade with BRICS reached about $468 billion. Russia's was $164 billion, while India achieved $142 billion. And their summit is coming up August 22 through 24, so just about 3 weeks from today, we're going to start learning a lot more about what the plans of BRICS are.
Well, good for Africa and the people of Africa. So this list I looked at here, it was posted in the Dollar Vigilante, you know, Jeff Berwick's Telegram page is, you know, United Arab, you know, these are countries that have formally applied to join the alliance. There's only 16 in here. But basically every single country in here, best I can tell, the people of these countries have been pretty much done a lot of harm by
the U.S.
I mean, maybe the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia hasn't done not much harm, but there was definitely...
That's because the U.S. has to treat them with kid gloves.
Right, because they have so much influence with the oil. And also, you know, Saudi Arabia spent a lot of years buying a lot of politicians. You know, it was pretty clear that they owned the Bush crime family, probably the same way that the, you know, Ukrainians own the Biden crime family. But even for a long time in this country, there was a lot of negative sentiment and racism towards Middle Eastern people because of all of the propaganda and nonsense of 9/11. And just all of the, you know, the media and the government, you know, sort of pushing the, you know, this agenda that we should, you know, these brown people are a problem on the other side of the world and we got to go to war with them and all that. I when I was, you know, in my 20s, it was always somebody, you know, that I was working with had a problem with Middle Easterners. And, you know, that was due to the government propaganda. So I can understand where, like, people from Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates would not be happy with America. And let me tell you something about those fellas out there, you know, wearing their turbans in the desert. They're more redneck than the Americans. If you want to watch Saudi Arabian or United Arab Emirates, UEA sand drags, you should see these cars that they have. They have, like, Toyota 4Runners. They got big, like, 700-cubic-inch V8 engines in them. They got, you know, 2-3 turbochargers on them. They're making, like, 4,000 horsepower, and they do these hill climbs out in the desert in these sand drags. And they have, like, Chevy pickup trucks all jacked up and ready to go, you know. It's pretty cool. And actually, the guy who informed me of that was Will Coley.
Okay.
So Will Coley and
our
were talking.
Former imam co-host here.
Yeah, so Will Coley's like, well, I'm a Muslim and I'm a redneck. I grew up in Eastern Tennessee. And he goes, you want to see how the wealthy Muslim rednecks, what they do? Check this out, Jay. You'll like this. And he pulls out his phone and he shows me these sand drags in Dubai. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. That's like, you know, those guys are doing the cool stuff.
And now you're saying the UAE and Saudi Arabia are on the list of nations that are applying for BRICS membership. It's been announced, Jay, already, even though the summit hasn't even happened yet, there's an announcement that some nations will be admitted into BRICS. So what they haven't said is which ones are going to be admitted, but this is apparently going to happen. So how many there are going to be, we don't know.
Well, it'll be whichever. So obviously, it sounds like you have to apply. This says countries that have formally applied to join the alliance. So this will be countries that have value to those other countries in the BRICS that have value in a partnership.
Right.
This is just like, you know, you should be raising your children with this intent to have value when they grow up. So people will want to join and have alliances with them. And you yourself, if you're someone who's valuable, you're going to see you have a lot of friends. So it's the same thing with nations also. And, you know, you got nations like Bangladesh, Venezuela, Argentina, I can tell you Venezuela and Argentina have tremendous amount of cropland, major
underutilized,
resources.
But I mean, they basically destroyed their economies through hyperinflation, so those countries are in dire need of assistance.
And here's the thing. So you got Bahrain, Mexico, Nigeria, Algeria.
Mexico would be huge.
Yep.
If Mexico were to join BRICS, and I'd be surprised if they told Mexico no, right? Because that gets them right on the U.S.'s doorstep. And if they can convince Mexico to start trading with China in the Chinese yuan or whatever it is that's going to be coming out from BRICS, that's going to be a huge change.
And a really smart move for these countries to all join up. And you also have Egypt and Iran. So what I see here is you have a bunch of nations who have just the people in general. What are the people in general like in these nations? So in Venezuela, they've already seen what happens when you have fiat dollars, and all these people that are alive today live through this horrible collapse, hyperinflation. So they're probably ready for something gold back. I could see the people of Venezuela and Argentina, they've been in the recent decades, they have the same thing where their currency goes up and down due to manipulations of their own governments. And they're also the Venezuelan people, as you know, for years on Free Talk Live, we've talked about Venezuela, and they point the finger at the United States for their problems.
Well, they do, and that's not fair. I mean, that's typical for the socialist countries. Venezuela's
sure.
problems is communism and socialism. That's the bulk of it. But they also do that in North Korea
yeah.
as well. North
yeah.
Korea loves to blame the
sure.
United States for all the problems that North Korea's government has created. That's pretty common.
The people of Venezuela believe that, you know, the U.S. is a bad country, has caused them strife, is, you know, the reason that they had to go to the zoo and, you know, slaughter the animals and eat them. You know, we reported on that.
The U.S. has not helped. I mean, let's be clear. It's not as though the U.S.'s hands are completely clean, so it would be nice if the U.S. would stop meddling in these nations and give them absolutely no reason to complain about them. But you know, you're right. I mean, there's definitely been a lot of anti-U.S. propaganda in these places, and that has done some damage.
And so a lot of these people in this country have been damaged, and also they're the kind of people who have grew up in rough times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
It's been very rough. So a lot of the people who are surviving and thriving now in Venezuela, they're strong. Or they're just total government parasites. There's going to be one or the other. But, you know, a lot of people got the crap kicked out of them just, you know, in general. And in most of these countries. So the thing is, you got strong people willing to work, probably willing to work hard, probably mm-hmm. have a lot of skills, probably wanting to learn skills, and that are super productive. To where here in America, you know, the consumption is going to really go down. You know, a lot of today's 25-year-olds, they don't want to own a house. A lot of 20-year-olds don't want to own a car. A lot of teenagers aren't interested in
driving. You can't even own a house right now. I mean,
that's
look
true
at the,
too.
I was just listening to Professor Peter St. Ange. I like to watch. He's got like a little 3-minute video he puts out 7 days a week, by the way, but just kind of like with economic information. And one of them recently was explaining why U.S. homeowners are apparently feeling trapped in their home. We talk a lot about migration, right? Like pick
yep.
up your life and move to a place that's better for you. A lot of people are feeling like they can't because they're under a mortgage where they currently live, which is at like 3%. And if they're going to get a new mortgage on a new house wherever it is they move to, it's
right,
going to be
right,
like
yep.
7%. And so they're just staying put. Now, of course, you could sell your house and just go pay rent. So it's like if you really want to move, you could probably do it. But anyway, there's more coming up. We'll talk a little bit more about BRICS and their expansion plans on the way.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay Heating Pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay Heating Pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.